So, Bazir Shah's Pasha Shmois, Tav Shin Pei Alf. We're going to focus here on a little bit of a historical controversy, and that is the Tshuva of the Besamim Rosh. I am hopefully Mitzvah Shem be coming out of the Haggadah this year. So, what I was, as you know, my style, I bring a lot of Maamar Mekoymos, and one of them was from Tshuva's Besamim Rosh. And this Tshuva in Kuf Tzadik Vav, the Besamim Rosh has a beautiful Tshuva where he writes, "Why is it we don't make a bracha on the Haggadah?" Which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and the Besamim Rosh writes, because since the entire Haggadah is praise of Hashem, you don't make a, it would kind of be counterintuitive or counterproductive to make a bracha on something which is a praise itself. If I'm commanded to praise, right? Mother says, say thank you, and the kid says thank you, it's not as nice or as effective as a person who wants to on his own say thank you. So this is the tshuva I quote. My editor emails me back saying, you got to take it out. You cannot quote your Besamim Rosh in your Haggadah. So I said, what do you mean? Besamim Rosh is quoted so many times by Kiva Eger on Shulchan Aruch and other places, and so many Achronim, how can you tell me not to quote it? So he came up with a pshara, and the pshara was that I'm going to write like this. I bring down the Besamim Rosh, and on the bottom of the footnote, I write, Yadua Masha Pikpaku Ha'oilam B'yachas L'Sefer Zeh, that we know the tumult that arose after the Besamim Rosh was printed, and not many people agree that it was from the Rosh. But it is brought down by Rekiv Eiger in many places. So I want to delve into what was the back and forth over here. You have a Sefer here, which was quoted by so many of the Achronim. It's quoted by hundreds of Achronim, and including Rekiv Eiger. So we're dating this back to the 1700s. And yet, the same Sefer, which the Chasam Sofer claims is a forgery, the Sochet Shavar writes that if you have this sefer in your house, you can burn it on Yom Kippur Shechalios Shabbos. That's what he writes about it. And Kehena v'Kehena, you're going to have on both sides of the coin very strong comments about the authenticity of this Besamim Rosh. So it behooves us, I think, to frame it in a historical background, which we will, and to go through a number of tshuvos that kind of irked, I said, the gedolim of that time and of future generations. But I want to end off. So then, where does we find the Besamim Rosh in our libraries? You know, kind of how are we to deal with it nowadays and going forward? And just something from the B'ayat Yosef, I think, is very pertinent, and some other achronim that I'll bring down at the end. Okay, so what's the history? 1793, the Besamim Rosh is published by the son of the chief rabbi of Berlin. His name is Reb Shaul Berlin. We know the Rosh was of later Balei HaTosfos, the Rosh in the late 1200s. Early 1300s, he finally moves to Spain, and there he has a big influence on the Sephardi community also. And he's the precursor to the father, is the father of the Torah, which is the precursor of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch bases his Shittas on the three great Rishonim, and the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh. So the Rosh is held us as one of the greatest Rishonim we have and the Balei Halacha. And Reb Shaul Berlin claims that he went on a trip to Italy and he found a manuscript there. This manuscript was collected, tshuva was collected by someone named Isaac de Molina in the 1500s. And he was on a trip to Alexandria where he found these manuscripts. And they never were Yotze Lor, they never published. And Reb Shaul Berlin was doing the chesed of publishing this tshuvas of the Rosh. And he gets two haskamas. One haskama he gets is from his father, Tzvi Hirsch Berlin, who was the chief rabbi of Berlin. And the other haskama is from none other than Reb Chezkel Landau. Reb Chezkel Landau is the Noida B'Yehuda, the Gadol Hador of the time. And he has these two haskamas in his sefer. And he provides an introduction, and he provides an introduction from Reb Isaac de Molina. And he explains how he found this pile of manuscripts in Alexandria that contained many tshuvas from the Rosh that had never been published. And he put the unpublished ones together, and he copied them and collected them, and then they got stuck in Italy somehow. And Reb Shaul Berlin explains how he gets it, and he brings his tshuvas. There are 392 tshuvas that are brought, and that's why the sefer is called Besamim Rosh, because Besamim is gematria 392. In this sefer, there's also a commentary called the Kasa Deharsana, and that is the commentary of Reb Shaul Berlin. So Shaul Berlin brings forth these tshuvas, and he writes a commentary on the tshuvas called the Kasa Deharsana. And immediately after it's published, problems start. A sefer written by a young individual at the time, a sefer called Ze'ev Yitrof, claims 20 tshuvas of the 392 tshuvas are problematic. Then, Rafael Hamburg's Mechutun, was Rabbi Yaakov Katzenellebogen, so he claims that he also is worried about these tshuvas that are printed here, and he writes a letter to Rav Mordechai Benet. And he asks Rav Mordechai Benet to please look into this sefer. Now, Mordechai Benet, just to give a background to who he is, because he writes the most, he has a sefer published called Parshas Mordechai, and in there he writes attack on this B'Samer Rosh, but it's so beautiful the way it's written. And he was the chief rabbi of Morovia. So he's going all the way to the Czech-Polish border over there as we know it. And he's born about 1753, dies about 80 years later. Mordechai Benet is a very unique individual. He didn't study in Germany at all, and yet he was very well respected by all sides. The Hasidim, the Mittler Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was held him very high in a letter. He was a friend of the Chasam Sofer, who eulogized him and says that Ben Yochid Lekut Shebrichu, and he had a beautiful way of writing, and he was very educated, and he was not Bederch Pilpul at all. Everything he wrote was really built on systematic evidence, and he's very critical. And in fact, they bring this letter that he wrote. It's a lengthy letter, but this letter, it's really like a tshuva to bash, so to say, this B'Samer Rosh as a proof to his beautiful writing. And he writes a letter criticizing this sefer. And he tries to get people to put it in cherem. That's what that was his attempt to do. So let us go through a couple of the tshuvas here and see what kind of what raised the eyebrows of the Gedolim at the time. And then we're going to, if we can prove at all that maybe there is a questionable part to this, we have to explain why would Rav Shaul Berlin forge 390 tshuvas of the Rosh. It seems to be such a strange thing to do. And then if we can understand a little bit of perspective of Rav Shaul Berlin's life, maybe help us put the whole thing into some sort of framework. So an easy tshuva that they jump on is a tshuva where the Rosh and the Rashba are having a back and forth discussion. And this is about there was a punishment given to a woman who committed adultery at the time. They would cut off her nose. And they wanted to know if they agreed with this punishment in the communities or not. And the Rosh, again, the Samim Rosh, claims, yes, he agrees. And the Rashba writes a letter to the Rosh saying he disagrees. Now, the Rashba wrote the letter to the Rosh. The date of the letter is 10 years after the Rashba died. So in terms of a dateline, it becomes problematic that this was written in 1320, and the Rashba has already been deceased by 10 years when the letter is written back. I don't know, that's the biggest riot, because a lot of times we had different things attributed to different Rishonim. And we quote it from the Rashba, and it's Miuchas the Ramban, and yeah, back and forth. But that was one of the things they jumped on. Some of the more controversial ones had to do with shaving. He quotes a tshuva from the B'Samer Rosh, and Tshuva Mem says, debates if shaving should be allowed on Chol HaMoed. And the reason shaving, we don't shave on Chol HaMoed is we shouldn't go into Yontav Menuvel. We should prepare ourselves and be scared. If people were allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed, that's when they had their free time. And shaving is a much bigger ordeal than we do nowadays. Therefore, they should be they weren't allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. But the Rosh says maybe if a person shaved Erev Yontav, he should be allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed also, because he didn't go into Yontav Menuvel. But the Rosh ends up saying that you cannot shave on Chol HaMoed, which is our practice. Rav Shaul Berlin has a commentary called the Kasha D'Harsin, in which he argues, and Rav Shaul Berlin says you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. Now, he puts that out. He gets into big trouble. And almost immediately after the publication, he puts out something called the Moda'a Rabba. Moda'a Rabba is a retraction of his Shiva. He said, I did not show this to my father. Father Gezi was the chief rabbi of Berlin. And therefore, my father does not agree with what I wrote, and I am retracting my position. And he backs off his tshuva of shaving. However, he does come up with something where he explains, and this gets used in a tshuva called Tshuvas are called Mimamakim. The Mimamakim tshuvas are a very sad series of tshuvas written about situations in the Holocaust. And there was a person, they use a svara of the Besamim Rosh. And that is as follows, that if a person has a rash on his face, this is what the Besamim Rosh talking about, and he can't use the powder to clear his beard, but he has to keep his hair off his face. So now he really, his only aids is really to use a razor. So the Rosh comes out and says that for a hair to be considered a hair, it has to be long enough to be able to fold over. So if you can cut it with a scissor so that it's no longer long enough to be able to fold over, and then you can use a shaver because it's not considered it's not considered a hair anymore. And that's how you can get out of the problem of shaving with a razor. Slice it down so that it's very tiny. That you do beheter with a scissors, and then you can use a shaver. The Chasam Sofer writes, in Kovitz Tshuvas, the Chasam Sofer writes that you should not print such a tshuva. Mutav shehu shelo lahatvis tshuva zois, shelo liten yad lepoishim hamashchisim betar. Because this is going to give those people who want to shave, get that clean shaven, look like the goyim at that time especially, this is going to give them a yad, this is going to give them the basis on what to do it for. But this is brought down by the Shubha Makmi. I forgot his exact case he has over there, but basically, because of some sort of tsar, the person had to shave, and he quotes this as a svara, said, an eitzah, why don't you do is you cut it down, and then you can use the razor. Which one? The Chasam Sofer says it's not right. That's not a correct extrapolation. That you can't just cut it down and then shave and think that's not a hair anymore. You're still going to be chayav for shaving. Correct, correct. In a non-halachic tshuva, this Besamim Rosh, this is in Reish Nun Zion, from what's quoted. It's difficult to find something with different prints, but this Besamim Rosh gets involved in philosophy. And he writes over there, a person cannot reach understanding of the true philosophical ideas of the Torah just by learning Chazal and the Pesukim. A person will not be able to achieve this. Rather, he has to learn philosophy by the Goyim. This is what the Rosh writes. That's quoted in the Besamim Rosh. So the big problem with this, it doesn't sound great, but the problem is the Rosh himself, we have Tshuvas of the Rosh. Like, we don't have any Tshuvas of the Rosh. We have a sefer called Shot HaRosh. And in there, in Tshuva Nun Ches, the Rosh says a person should not turn to philosophy of the Goyim to understand the philosophy of Torah. And this seems to be in direct idea of what this of the Rosh is saying. It's written in this Besamim Rosh. And this is one of the places where the Parshas Mordechai, the Mordechai Benet, goes at length to decry, basically, what was being written in this Besamim Rosh. And he writes over there that this Besamim Rosh also wrote as follows. He said, that which the Rambam brings down, 13 Yisoidis Ha'emuna, the Yisoidim Ha'ikrim, says, Mi hiter loy lohisiv alator likvoy ikri ha'emuna, chiyuve alev mishikol daitoy. He quotes the Besamim Rosh as saying, that who allowed the Rambam to decide what's important for us and what's considered an ikar or not? And that is also a question, even though the people were not so, we're being a yoni, we had some problems with people at certain time periods with the Rambam. But to say the Rosh was going to throw out the ikar of the Rambam also becomes very sketchy. In fact, Menachas Elazar is Shrei V'Kayim against the Besamim Rosh and held was for sure a forgery. He says, there's another tshuva that the Besamim Rosh writes, that the reason why Klai Yisrael and Meisr Nefesh is so they won't be assimilated into the Goyim. Now, he says, the problem with that, this thing, the reason why we're Meisr Nefesh and give up our lives sometimes is not to be assimilated. He says that seems very nationalistic and not because of the Avodas Hashem involved or the Chiyuv Daraisa involved, or that which Chachamim tell us involved. It seems to me that purely giving the idea that Jewish people don't want to be assimilated. But he doesn't put it in the context of Torah and mitzvahs. He says it can't be the Rosh would write such a thing. The Rosh would have to say that the reason why we're Meisur Nefesh is because of Torah and mitzvahs, as by the Vodas Hashem. In fact, the Basam Rosh actually takes it a step further, because he questions nowadays if we if we had this whole Yag Val Yavar applies. If a person really should have to give up his life for Torah and Mitzvahs, or say the Gimel Averis, or Chil Hashem, the Besamim Rosh is mefakbek that maybe nowadays we don't have to do it. So it's another questionable tshuva, which is pointed out by the Achronim. But he goes further, because this Besamim Rosh had a lot more questionable tshuvas. He writes in there that in Simon Yud Tes, that he didn't, now some people might really agree with this, but he complained, the Rosh complains about the length of davening. And he says we shouldn't have long davening. He says these early katzer seder atvila v'yisoyin al-shiyah sh'adav lo'itza l'poyil. In fact, that he couldn't do it. And I'll just quote you the Lashon he writes. V'alavai v'yoyim ruboi v'olim rak ma'at v'tvila sh'manesre levad. We should have very few piyutim, very few tvilas, and sh'manesre. Say that b'kavona, but ribu dvorim, just say a lot of things and people just throw it out anyway. We shouldn't have that as our structure of tefillah. So you can see that, you know, some parties would agree, but some parties wouldn't agree. He has a tshuva there in Reish Nuntes where he writes that nowadays, in his time, there was some in Rush, writes, if it was the Rush, talking about the 1300s, that we don't go after Chazal when it comes to refuah. That we look at the doctors nowadays who tell us that nishtanu atvoyim, that nature has somehow changed, and therefore we go after the doctors, not after Chazal. And then he questions over there, maybe we should do the same thing when it comes to treifus. That maybe when it comes to treifus in an animal, we shouldn't look at Chazal, we should look at the study of anatomy that was taking place at that time, and they'll tell us what's a healthy animal and what's not. Now you can also sense why that can be questionable. In another tshuva, he wants to get rid of Natil Sadaim. We shouldn't have the gzera anymore of Natil Sadaim before we eat bread. He wants to get rid of the idea that a Baal Keri shouldn't wear tefillin, the whole Takanas Ezra. Then he got a little more controversial. He wants to get rid of the Isra of Yayin Nesach. It shouldn't be a problem anymore to drink wine touched by Goyim. Why? Because the goyim nowadays are not involved in nesach. They're not taking the wine to lie, you know, pricking their fingers in the wine as a libation to their god. And therefore, we shouldn't have the iser yayin nesach. He has another tshuva where he wants to get rid of kidneys. The kidneys, he says, came from a strange minog, and with mice, that's not really a concern anymore. And the Rosh wants to get rid of the Isra of Kidneyus. He has another tshuva he wants to, a very strange tshuva, what exactly what he was trying to say, they're not sure, but he says that if a wedding that took place on Tisha B'Av, that people should enjoy themselves. There's no problem eating and drinking at that point once you made a wedding on Tisha B'Av. But the two most controversial tshuvas, these tshuvas were so controversial, they got removed from print. If you take out of some Rush now, these two tshuvas will not appear there. What is interesting is the numbering still appears, but those two numbers are skipped. So I think it's Shimem Hay. So you have Shimem Dalet and then Shimem Vav right after that. But there's no Shimem Hay already. But these were taken out because these created a lot of issues for this Sefer. Number one, the less controversial of the two, was the topic of riding in a carriage on Shabbos. And the Rush was asked if a person is traveler, is approaching Shabbos, and he has a choice of going to a city and trying to find a chesed by somebody, as an areach, to get a place to stay for Shabbos, or can he continue traveling until he gets home and not rely on staka at all. And the Besamim Rush writes, you can continue traveling. Continue traveling on Shabbos, you don't have to stop, and wait till you get back home. And that created a lot of people disagreed with that, and they wrote extensively against it, and that tshuva is taken out. But the most famous tshuva of the Besamim Rosh, anybody who's done a little history of the Besamim Rosh knows that this is the most famous tshuva, and that is the tshuva lo aleinu on suicide. The Besamim Rosh writes over there, he says, and I'll quote his lashon over here, he was asked by someone that he had someone who committed suicide, if they could bury him amongst other Jews, and if they can sit shiva for him. The nog, the way Kleisel was noigid, the way the halacha seems to be straightforward, it's clearly that a person's mahabit atzvoladas, a person who kills himself, is committing a heinous crime, and he's not buried amongst Kleisel, and he is not mourned. There's no avails for such a person. But this Besamim Rosh writes, V'heishiv shechalila dunasa isha zelera. You should not judge this person as he did something evil, as you find by Shaul ben Kish, kills himself. Kishol was worried the plishtim were gonna harm him. Elakosha asa meribu tzaroisav. A person killed himself because he had a ribu tzaroisav, a daigus, and yusurin, a oini gomer. He was very poor. Enkan mechush. We don't have a problem with such a person. And adrabah, we're allowed to bury him in our cemeteries, and you should sit shiva for him. This was the tshuva shin mem hei of the Besamim Rosh that's now no longer you can find it. I once had to find, I think, Eli Reisman had an old, I don't know where he had, maybe about Hebrew books. He was able to get me this tshuva once years ago. But on this tshuva, the Chasam Sofer wrote, Ubezeh nizdayev sefer Besamim Rosh. It's this tshuva that I am proving the Besamim Rosh is a forgery, as it cannot be. Tuv Tam Vidas also writes that Shtakei Adavri should get rid of the Sefer because of this tshuva that he wrote about suicide. So exactly, but the Sholom Eshiv writes that maybe it's, why are you jumping on the Besamim Rosh? Maybe it's not so bad. And in fact, you look in Rekivi Eger right there in Shulchan Aruch and Shimem Hei, Rekivi Eger says, if a person has in such situation, he couldn't be on Benesayin. If he's allowed to kill himself, Ayin be Besamim Rosh. Look in the Besamim Rosh to see what to do. And as Barry pointed out, that is the common practice today. I once spoke to Dr. Fox about this many years ago. And he also said, no, we don't like the Besamim Rosh. And then I asked him, but what do we do nowadays? And he said, we do basically like the Besamim Rosh. Nowadays, we do treat suicide as a tsar, a choyli hanefesh. You say the person wasn't in the right mind, and we do bury him, and we do sit shiva for such a person. But, okay, that's for different shmooz to talk about the all the different impacts on what the Chasam Sofer was coming from. But this was the tshuva that really set the Chasam Sofer off and others. Okay, so why? There's so many tshuvas here, hopefully bring out, that at least question the fact, was this written by the Rosh? And why would, if it was a forgery, okay, why would Rav Shaul Berlin forge 392 tshuvas and claim them to be the Rosh? So who was Rav Shaul Berlin? We said his father was, Tzvi Hirsch Berlin, was the chief rabbi of Berlin. His brother becomes the chief rabbi of Great Britain. Shaul Berlin himself had smicha by the age of 20. At 28, he already had a rabbinic post. He eventually becomes the chief rabbi of Frankfurt. When the Besamim Rosh is printed, he's the chief rabbi of Frankfurt. He began his writing career with an anonymous letter called Ksav Yosher. Ksav Yosher, which is a writing on justice, was really an attack on Rabbanim. And he was not happy with the German education and the rabbinic influence, so to say, on the German education. And he felt that Pilpul was not the proper approach to Limud HaTorah. And the way they quote it is, injures the sound common sense of the pupils and deadens their noblest aspirations. It's a translation. But it was a sharp rebuke on kind of the rabbinic courts at the time. There was another work that came before the Besamim Rosh that really made Shaul Berlin a marked man. And that was a Rebbe Froel Cohen. Paul Cohen was the chief rabbi of the Triple Community, which was Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. This is up, all the way up in northwest Germany. He puts out a sefer on Yeridea called Torah Yekusiyot. You can find the Sefer nowadays. I wouldn't call it a remarkable Sefer. There's nothing, it's not quoted often. It's a parish on your idea. Even though that wasn't remarkable, what takes place right after that is remarkable. Because it's a little later, it's 17 years later, that a Sefer is published called Mitzpeh Yoktiel. So his Sefer was Teres Yekusiel. He has a Sefer called Mitzpeh Yoktiel. Mitzpeh Yoktiel is published by someone named Ovadia Bar Boruch. No one knows who he is. Ovadia Bar Boruch puts out this Mitzpeh Yoktiel. This is an attack on Revol Cohen's Sefer they put on Yeridea. So he attacks the Sefer, and then he attacks Revol Cohen himself. Revol Cohen was one of the biggest Rabbanim in the area, for sure. And the Beis Din of Altona puts this Ovadia Bar Boruch into Cherem. Him and his Sefer, Mitzpeh Yoktiel, goes to Cherem, and they want to get more Rabbanim involved. They send it all the way to Vilna, to the Vilna Gaon, to ask him to sign it. And they sure enough send it to a couple hundred miles away to Berlin. They're in Altona. They send it to Berlin. And the chief rabbi of Berlin is Zvi Hirsch, Berlin. And they ask him to join the Cherem. And the story goes that Zvi Hirsch was about to sign the Cherem. And someone leans over to him and whispers him a pasuk from Malachim. Malachim Beis is a play on words. But he says, Aha Adoini V'hu Shaul. And then telling over there that it's something which was borrowed, Shaul. But they were hinting to him that Zvi Hirsch, this was written by your son, Shaul, not by Ovadia Bar Baruch. There is no Ovadia, the son of Baruch. This attack or Revol Cohen is written by none other than your son, Shaul Berlin. And Zvi Hirsch does not sign the Cherem. Not only does he not sign the Cherem, he writes a letter back defending his son, called Tshuvos Harav. And he defends his son, not only that his son's a big enough Talmud Chacham to argue with Revol Cohen, but also, you know, you're allowed to argue with. There's no problem in arguing, and they're entitled to disagree with each other. And he gets Becheskel and he gets an Eid of Yehuda to write also that Shaul Berlin is allowed to disagree with Revol Cohen. This actually makes the headlines of the German newspapers of the time. But it's only a few years later, 3 years later, now that the Besamim Rush comes into being. And like we said, the Besamim Rush comes into being, and Rav Shaul Berlin gets the two Haskamas. He gets a Haskama from his father, Zvi Hirsch Berlin. And Zvi Hirsch writes that you see from this tshuva and from my son's commentary, the Kasa, the Harsana, how big a Talmud Chacham my son is, and this put to rest any lingering questions about my son's intentions. And he quotes, and the Haskam that he has there from the Noyde B'Yehuda is a little bit odd in the framework of the facts that we just explained, because he writes over there that the Noyde B'Yehuda writes, the Rush doesn't need my Haskama, and Rav Shaul Berlin also doesn't need my Haskama because his reputation is so well known. It was well known, but not always in a positive sense. And that is when these Rabbanim start attacking the Besamim Rush. Now, what happened to the manuscript? Which means they claim that he got a manuscript that was written by Isaac de Molina, and he brought it over. And from there, he put together the Besamim Rush. But Zvi Hirsch testifies, the father testifies, that this manuscript was in our house for 12 years, and I'm very familiar with it. And it's with Zvi Hirsch Berlin, who's very well respected. He created the index of the Besamim Rush. And Zvi Hirsch himself says, even if you want to tell me maybe 5% of the tshuvas are questionable, but 95% of the tshuvas are conclusive. They are from the Rush, and they are not made up. This doesn't help Shaul Berlin's so much. And Shaul Berlin ends up... He ends up going to London, and he dies a few months later after this whole thing, and there's a letter found in his pocket, and he warned everyone not to look into his papers. He said all his stuff should be sent to his father, and he didn't want to be buried in the Jewish cemetery in some lonely spot, and didn't want him to change his clothes. It was a very sad ending to Shaul Berlin's life. So that puts a twist on Shaul Berlin. Here you had an individual who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, right? And if he wrote this, people aren't claiming that it didn't sound like the Rush. Just the, you know, the topics in there obviously gave a little bit of a hint to Shaul Berlin's background, where he was affected and influenced by the Enlightenment of the time. And some of those tshuvas stand out. You know, the tshuva about shaving. People at that time wanted to look like the goyim. He had tshuva about philosophy. He had numerous tshuvas in there that a person can claim that the reason why he wrote a lot of those tshuvas was to kind of break away from the rabbinic authority at the time, which he felt was too strong on the populace. And he was fighting it. And it's very early of the time, but that was his thing. They even point out that we said there's 392 tshuvas. The Rosh HaTeivos of Shaul Ben Tzvi, Shin Beis Tzadik, is 392. It could have been a hint to his name in the tshuvas. But what do we do with a sefer like this? You have a sefer which is questionable, the author is questionable based on history, and yet it's quoted hundreds of times, by achronim after achronim after achronim, quote this sefer, the Besamin Rush, and you find it in Pilpul Svarim, you find it in Tshuva Svarim. So how did it get to that stage? It actually was reprinted in 1984 by someone named Amar, Reuven Amar, in Eretz Yisrael, and he writes a defense that the Besamin Rush is really the Rush. He brings two haskamas. One is from Avadu Yosef, one is from a Binyamin Silber. Binyamin Silber claims that, I don't know why he printed it there, but he quotes Reuven Amar is incorrect, and it is a forgery. And Rav Yosef quotes it many times in his tshuvas, and he gives a little bit of a defense. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's a little bit, definitely not a great haskama either. The Stipler is known to have said, "Sheyesh sham harbe tshuvas mezuyafos." You have to know there are many tshuvas there that are forgeries. Yaakov Kamenetsky in The Making of a Gadol is quoted as saying that, "Do you think that he just fooled us?" Meaning his people of his stature. He said even Rabbi Akiva Eiger was fooled by this. That sounds like he held the whole thing was a forgery. And Victor Nevensol is brought down as saying that the person brings down the Besamin Rush, then it's Royal Ahaska Sheish Mistagim Harifus Ma'asefer Zeh. You should write that people are mefakbek, people are unclear, they're not sure if this is really the Rush, and that's what I did. Hopefully that's going to be in my Haggadah. But it doesn't end like that. It's not a simple ending. Rabbi Yochum Fischel Perlau, who wrote the famous Ha'aris on the Rasag, this amazing sefer, he printed in Noam, which is an early publication, in the mid-1900s. He prints a long, not so long, it's a couple of pages long, but he says that any proofs you're going to prove to show that it's not the Rush is not a substantive proof. You cannot tell me it's for sure not the Rush. And therefore, you can't disregard the sefer. And I think the line that wraps it all up for me, that if I want to know what did I do with it, if I see someone quote the Besamin Rush, was aptly said by Revad Yosef. This is in a Tshuvan Yabiyo Emir, in Chelik Beis, in Yerodea Simen Chof Dalet. So he says that we know many people are ma'or on the sefer Besamin Rush, that it's mezuyof, that it's a forgery. And it was written by Reb Shaul Berlin, Shaul Levine. And every he writes like this, Ve'ein lemeidim mi sefer ze ele mitzad ha'amor v'loi mitzad misha amram. You can only learn from the sefer based on what it says and not based on the author. Which means many times we approach, especially early the Rishonim, that they say something, we don't just disregard it, even if it doesn't seem to make sense to us, because it was written by a Rishon. So it will carry the weight of a Rishon based on the authorship of it. It might carry the weight based on the svara of it. But there's a weight certain given to the author as we go through our svara. Go through our svara shelves, we look at different authors and they carry different weights. And therefore, if we even we disagree with it, we cannot disregard it simply because of who the author is. And that doesn't apply to the sefer Besamin Rush. You cannot hold on to the fact that it's the Rush saying it, and therefore it'll have the validity or the strength of summing it from the Rishonim. On the other hand, there's such tremendous pilpul and beautiful svaras and kashas and terutzim that I've found in the Besamin Rush, and even in the Kasa of the Harsana, in the, you know, by Rishol Berlin, that to this day we find throughout, you look through the Achon, Pischei Tshuva and Yerodea, and like I said, Riki Veger, And it's so you search quick search on the Bar Ilan account, thousands of times it appears the amount of time it's quoted by the Achronim. So we can't disregard it. But at least we should understand a little bit of the background of it and who it was. And next time you come across it, you'll be able to at least put it in some sort of framework. That was the topic for tonight.